hello. Thanks for everybody for coming, and Dave for putting this talk together. And he was instrumental in working on this project. We're both at the USDA National Lab for Ag and the Environment in Ames, Iowa. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some patterns in corn yields that we found. And let's see here. Some of the people involved with this work, Dave certainly was, couldn't have done it without him, and Jerry Hatfield, who's the lab director, was real instrumental in this. And also Li Wong Ma was very helpful in this work. So what I'm going to talk about is, can we detect some interannual corn yield patterns? And the way that I initially started investigating this project was, we were doing some long-term agricultural system modeling over 30, 40, 50 years, and we started detecting some patterns in the tau flow and the nitrogen content in the tau flow. And we noticed that if you had a corn-soybean rotation and you switched that to a soybean-corn rotation in the opposite years, that you got higher nitrogen losses. And we were wondering, well, why is this happening? And spent a lot of time digging into it, and we found some kind of interesting patterns, I think, and hopefully it'll make some sense here as we go through it. If we can detect patterns, long-term patterns in corn yield, there may be the opportunity to improve profitability. Would we be able to apply fertilizer different? Would we be able to change the management somewhat year to year? Would we be able to change rotation, such as planting corn rather than soybean? Or would you be able to use different hybrids, plow techniques, pesticide applications, etc.? And if we can detect these patterns, the other thing that we may be able to do is help on environmental losses of nitrogen in the tau flow. And increased, if you have higher corn yields, you're having higher nitrogen in the biomass of corn, so you have less available in the soil for movement to shallow groundwater and out the tau flows into streams and rivers and down the Mississippi into the Gulf of Mexico. So higher corn yields result in less nitrogen loss to shallow groundwater and then into the streams. And I should say that in the nitrogen budget of a corn field, the highest part of that budget is the uptake of the corn. If you're not getting the nitrogen uptake right on simulation of corn yields, then you're not going to get the loss in the tau flow right. So this increased corn yield, it results in less nitrogen loss in shallow groundwater. So if you can detect corn yield patterns and be able to manage for those, this may lead to some reduced nitrate losses in tau flow. And we see that there are lots of publications that show large-scale climate patterns and their effect on crop productivity. There is a correlation between the El Nino Southern Oscillation and the North Atlantic Oscillation, and they affect crop productivity. And I just cite one of those more recent papers on that I found in the literature. And another pattern that we're going to talk about a little bit here as I go through this talk is the quasi-biennial oscillation that deals with stratospheric winds around the equator. And this is easterly or westerly wind regimes in the stratosphere, and it has a mean period of about 28 months. And some of these other climate indices, they also show quasi-biennial year-to-year patterns that people have reported in the literature. So ENSO and NAO also show there is a quasi-biennial pattern to those. But the pattern in corn yield really hasn't been talked about much. If there are some quasi-biennial patterns in the ENSO and the NAO, we should be able to detect those in corn production also, because it's so heavily related to weather, and the QBO or the NSO and NAO do affect corn production, and it's been shown in some other countries, not so much, and some in the United States too. So the objective was, we're going to use spectral and regression analysis to investigate long-term corn yields in Iowa. I'm going to include some daily temperature, rainfall, and solar radiation data. We're going to include the monthly indices of NAO, SOI, and QBO. NAO being the North Atlantic Oscillation and the SOI being the Southern Oscillation Index. And that NAO and SOI and QBO, these indices can be found on, I think, NOAA's webpage publishes, you can get, I think, monthly numbers for that back into the at least 40s or 50s, I believe. So here's a look at the state of Iowa, and we got county. Those are the different counties there, and the counties we're going to be looking at are in central Iowa. There's six counties that I'm going to talk about, and then the bottom, the southeasternmost county there is Story County, and that's where Iowa State University is in Ames, Iowa, and we're going to talk a little bit in detail about that here in a few slides. And then the light to dark shading is low to high area in harvested corn yield, so that's high production areas. The darker areas are high production areas, the lighter areas are low production areas. And then the small to large black circles are low to high corn yields. So we're looking in that central Iowa area. Here, these six counties we're looking at, they're high production and high yielding counties. So this is an important corn region for corn production in the U.S. and in the world. All right, so we have annual corn yield. We have 1950 through 2000. And the corn yield increases with time pretty linearly. If you just take the maximum corn yields, those are the large circles. If you did like the three-year maximum corn yield and just put a line through it, you get a linear regression, and it increases pretty linearly over time. And this increase is due to seed genetics, fertilizer, other technology advances. So we're getting higher corn yields over time. But when we do the spectral analysis, we want to take these long-term trends out. So you take this linear trend out, and you get another pattern, and I'm going to call this the yield fraction, the corn yield fraction, where we're taking the yield minus that linear trend and then dividing by the trend. So we get a yield fraction. And then there's also a long-term trend, kind of a polynomial trend in that corn yield, and we want to take that out of the data also, and you get this top line. We do some multi-taper spectral analysis to that, and it detects two significant periods that we're combining here, and it's a 2.3 and 2.6 year cycles. And that's this harmonic pattern you see. I don't include the equation for that. It's just, you know, basically a couple sine waves overlapping. And there's a pretty significant pattern that the observed corn yield follows. And how do we detect that? We use the multi-taper method, and we get the largest spectral magnitude at about 2.5 years, and then this multi-taper spectral method detects two significant frequencies of 2.6 and 2.3 years that are really contributing to this high spectral magnitude here. And that was that previous harmonic pattern you saw, was a 2.6 and 2.3 year pattern. And we're back to that graph again. And you can say that if you just take this harmonic pattern and say, all right, at the same period that you have the observed corn yield, we're going to say that about 50% of this harmonic pattern is, let's categorize it as neutral, where 50% is neutral, and 50% is either high or low corn yield years. And then we take that spectral pattern where we detect neutral, high, and low corn yield, and we group the observed data. We group the observed corn yield according to that classification, and if you subtract the high and low corn yield, high and low observed corn yield, there's about a 16% difference. So that's a pretty significant difference there. Just doing a following the harmonic that we detected here. So what is causing that? What's causing that? Certainly weather is one of the biggest factors, because we've taken technology out and the seed genetics and that sort of thing and long-term trends, and we're just going short-term trends. And we can, let's see here, we have the observed data, which is the broken line, and we have the solid line, which is the predicted. According to a regression equation of five weather variables, and this accounts for 89% of the variation in Story County, Iowa corn yield. And that Story County being where Iowa State University is. So five weather variables. And those weather variables are late and early season precipitation, late and early season temperature, and early season radiation. And you come up, there's a regression equation we developed that's has a few interactions, and we have these five different variables. It's a little hard to see how precipitation affects things or individual temperature, because you've got the interactions and you've got the squared term in there also. But so what we did was we came up to show this in a way that is easily illustrated. You can come up with these contour maps where you can show the effect of corn yield, that how it's affected by early temperature and early radiation, for example, or late temperature and early precipitation. And it kind of illustrates the effect of the two variables, the interaction of several variables. And for example, radiation, as radiation increases, the corn yield increases. This is the corn yield fraction that we talked about earlier, where it's all detrended. And as you get higher radiation in early in the season, you get higher corn yields. And the corn yield is also affected by precipitation late in the season. That may be, you know, mid-July into August precipitation. So as precipitation increases and early radiation increases is when you get the highest corn yields. And you can look at the same things on things like precipitation, early precipitation, and late precipitation, etc. But then you wonder, can you use some of these large-scale climate variables that I talked about, the NAO, North Atlantic Oscillation, and the Southern Oscillation? And we did some correlations with that, some regression analysis with that. And again, we've got a broken line for the observed six-county corn yield, those six counties that I showed you earlier. We have the predicted being the solid lines. And there is a correlation. These three variables account for 54% of the variation in the six-county Iowa corn yield. And those were that North Atlantic Oscillation, the Quasi-Binu Oscillation, and the Southern Oscillation Index. And you come up with a fairly simple regression equation that can predict, you know, that can show 54% of the variation in observed corn yield. And so we do the same thing as we did before. We categorize this simulated, this solid line, the simulated corn yield from the regression equation. We say 50% of that regression predicted corn yield is neutral, and then 50% of that regression predicted corn yield is either high or low. And then we group the observed data according to that classification, and that results in low and high corn yield, the difference between high and low corn yield of about 19%. So that's a pretty significant difference if we use this regression equation and then group the observed corn yield similar to group the observed corneals similar to that regression pattern there. And this is, we're back to the spectral analysis again, and on that climate predicted regression equation that I had, you can do the spectral analysis of that. We do the multi-taper method, and again, you get a peak right at this, I think it's 2.5 years again, and then that's similar to that observed corn yield. Get the peak right about the same time, and you get, let's see here, then you can do a coherence on that, and you see that those two, the observed data and that climate predicted corn yield is coherent in that, highly coherent in that quasi-biennial range of that 0.4, a frequency of about 0.4, what is it, cycles per year or 2.5 years. Now, I didn't get into a lot of the details of the spectral analysis. Dave helped me a lot on that, and there's software that we used to do a lot of that work. But some of the conclusions are that the results of this suggest that there is the existence of a quasi-biennial pattern in this long-term Iowa corn yield, and it's related to large-scale climate variability. And it has a predictable pattern of about 19% between the high and the low corn yields. And if you could predict this, we're not saying that at this point that it's really predictable prior to the season, but that there may be some ability for that later with some more research possibly. But if you could predict this 19% difference, it may have some economic and production benefits. And then it also would have some benefits environmentally with less nitrogen loss, if you could manage for that, less application of fertilizer or planting different hybrids, et cetera, or changing your management to some extent to take into account this pattern that we detect. And then, so refined versions of this research should help guide management decisions that may reduce nitrate delivery to streams and also improve agricultural profitability. And then this is published in Ag and Forest Meteorology and has some more details there if anyone's interested. And so there's some further research that can come out of this. Just simple things that I thought of were, you can apply this across the Corn Belt and see how these patterns are they the same or do they differ across the Corn Belts or in other states, other areas? And you could apply this to soybeans too. Some preliminary analysis shows that soybeans may show some patterns like this also, or you could do it for other crops. And I think that's all I have here. And I'll take any questions. I don't know if I can answer any of them, but I'll... Dave may have some more, be able to answer some of the more technical questions on the analysis if there are some of those. Yeah, Tim.
Yes, thanks, Rob. It's interesting stuff. I just wonder if you can explain the removal of that, looks like about decadal polynomial.
Yep.
And what you might be missing, like in the Pacific decadal oscillation.
Yep.
Might be driving that, or do you have a good reason to think that it's not climate related?
No, it probably would be some climate related or something else. I don't know if we would think it would certainly be climate related if it's the radiation or rainfall, et cetera, like you said, the Pacific Oscillation. The problem is doing spectral analysis, you only have, if you've got a 50-year cycle, you only have that one, kind of one replication there or something. You can't see it over a long period of time. And so that's hard to...
You try it with just the linear trend removed, and what happens if you do that, even though you have limited cycles? Four or five cycles.
Well, doing the spectral analysis, I don't think there would be enough data to detect significantly that polynomial that we saw there. But actually what I did was on the weather data, I applied it, I didn't explain this in complete detail, but some of that climate data where we took the NAO or the weather-related data, I left the polynomial trend in there. I didn't take that out. And I did both ways for looking at the difference between high and low corn yields, and it's significant either way, but we actually left that polynomial trend in when we did the regression analysis for the weather data. So that's a good point.
But as such, they're both empirical, because you would really have to know what's driving that otherwise, and we don't.
Yeah.
Well, that, I guess...
there's all kinds of cycles and everything. There's 86-year solar radiation cycles and all that, but you can't, that would show itself as a trend in 50 years of data, so...
What were you on that too?
So what drives the dominant 2.5 year?
Well, it definitely has to be related to, you know, the weather, I think there, you know, because, and then that climate, you know, that 2.5 year period, both those climate cycles, people have shown there's that biennial pattern there, and people have shown it in ice, the ice melting patterns, they've shown it in hydrology, some people have detected it. I don't know if they know exactly, you know, the reason, you know, for that, if there's kind of a physical reason for that or not.
Well, we have a climatologist here.
I was actually thinking about whether or not there's sort of a interaction between these different indices. Time scales. And there was recently a paper that was published about this climate shift in the mid-70s, and looking at a lot of these different indices and basically finding out that all of them are in phase. That can lead to these, you know, large-scale climate shifts that are associated with atmospheric and oceanic variability.
Right.
And there's some indication that another such shift might have happened in the early part of this decade.
Yeah.
Right. So it could be that, you know, these are not all independent. I mean, there's some interaction between NAO and ENSO and QBO and so forth.
Yeah.
So there's some collinearity issues.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you.